The chair calls the Education Policy Committee meeting to order for Wednesday, February 19th, 2025. We'll get that. So we're back in time. The committee legislative assistant has indicated that we have a quorum present. So Vice Chair Mueller, have you had a chance to review the minutes for Tuesday, February 18th, 2025? And if so, would you move approval for those minutes?
I have, and I would move approval to the minutes from, let's see, February, is it 18th? 18th. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Mueller moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed, nay? The ayes have it, and the minutes of Tuesday, February 18th, 2025 are approved. Okay, we have members. Before we begin with our next agenda item, there are a few comments I would like to make. With the bill coming up, I respect the passions and emotions on both sides of this issue and know that they can be high and sensitive, but we will abide by proper decorum during these proceedings. So to our guests in the room, I will remind you that we do not allow signs, clapping, or outbursts or comments from the audience. There will be no standing or sitting in the pathways. If you need accommodation, please communicate with our House Sergeant staff. There will be a verbal warning if decorum is not followed, and House staff may ask individuals to leave the room so the committee can proceed with its business. And I expect that's not going to happen, but I just want to lay these out ahead of time. Members, I expect each of us to handle this subject matter with respect and to treat each other, and especially our testifiers, with respect. We do not have to agree with each other to be polite. I will not tolerate any action by any member that I deem to be bullying or unnecessarily disruptive to our testifiers. And I know we have a great team here on both sides of the aisle, and I expect that that's, we'll all be respectful. Thank you for that. Let's see. Thank you, members. And what we'll do now is proceed to our main agenda item, which is House File 12 by Representative Scott. Chair Scott, welcome to the committee. And the chair moves that House File 12 be placed on the general register. Chair Scott has a DE amendment. Members, before I recognize Chair Scott to present her bill, we will adopt the DE 10 amendment to put the bill in the form the author prefers. This is a courtesy vote and not a vote for or against the language of the amendment. So the chair moves the adoption of the DE 10 amendment. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the DE 10 amendment is adopted. So Chair Scott, I see that you have some presenters with you. Please begin to present House File 12 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members and members of the public that care deeply about this issue. This bill is written to amend Chapter 121A in statute. The title of that chapter is Athletic Programs, semicolon, Sex Discrimination. It has a purpose statement, and not all areas of statute have that, but this one does. The legislature recognizes certain past inequities in access to athletic programs and in various degrees of athletic opportunity previously afforded members of each sex, race, and ethnicity. The purpose of this section is to provide an equal opportunity for members of each sex and members of all races and ethnicities to participate in athletic programs. Throughout this statute, there is language that speaks to the past limitations and discrimination placed on one sex. This chapter acknowledges that for decades, males had great privilege in athletic opportunities and programs where girls were sidelined. This chapter is Minnesota's Title IX chapter. 128.04 subdivision 3, letter A, reads, "It is not an unfair discriminatory practice to restrict membership on an athletic team to participants of one sex whose overall athletic opportunities have been limited." That is referring to girls. In addition to defining female, House File 12 is in keeping with the rest of Chapter 121 and seeks to protect and preserve girls-only sports teams for only girls. There is a reason that when Title IX and Chapter 121A came about, that girls were not just told they could go play or try out for the boys' teams. The reason is obvious, that males have the physical advantage over girls, and that to truly give girls athletic opportunities, they should be competing against one another. We cannot allow our girls to be vulnerable to losing their spot on the team that they've worked hard for, or to injury by a male teammate or competitor to protect the feelings of a male. As one reporter noted when reporting on an injury to a female hockey player by a trans-identifying male athlete, the size imbalance between the two skaters was so great that the far smaller female skater ended up being propelled headfirst into the boards with enough force to deliver a concussion. It is our duty in the legislature to protect girls in sports in the state of Minnesota. And Madam Chair, with that, I would turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you. Go ahead, whichever testifiers would like to present first. Okay, we have Renee Carlson. And Dr. John Odom, if you'd like to come sit in the other chair. We'll start with Renee Carlson. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Renee Carlson. I serve as general counsel for True North Legal. I'm also a former high school athlete, a coach's daughter, and a mother of female athletes in Minnesota. Girls' sports are a remarkable American success story in Minnesota and across the country. Even as the Supreme Court has strengthened protections for women, this cornerstone has remained. Quote, physical differences between men and women are enduring, whereas equal opportunities for girls means separate opportunities reserved just for them. Nearly 50 years ago, Congress enacted Title IX, a federal law historically recognized for breaking down barriers to women and girls. Minnesota followed, enacting what a Minnesota district court deemed the counterpart to Title IX, by passing its own protections for women and girls in Minnesota Statute 121A.04, formerly 126.21, a trailblazing law in which the spirit and intent of the law has always been protecting female opportunities through specific teams designated for females by explicitly requiring sports teams to, quote, be restricted to members of a sex whose overall athletic opportunities have previously been limited. At one point in time, the Minnesota State High School League agreed. In 1993, the league released its Gender Equity in Athletics Guidance, a 174-page manual referencing the statutory scheme, instructing Minnesota schools about, quote, the importance to our country's future to eliminate the barriers and ensure that females have the opportunity to reach their full potential as citizens in our democratic society, end quote. But nearly 10 years ago, in blatant disregard for girls and the law, the Minnesota State High School League swiftly adopted policies that erase girls from girls' sports by allowing males, and at times men, to take girls' opportunities while putting their physical safety at risk and robbing her of her dignity. While many states and federal government are decidedly protecting girls' sports, Minnesota girls must fight for their athletic existence because Minnesota laws that were designed to protect them are now being used against them. This, despite recently issued executive order keeping men out of women's sports, making clear the federal government has no tolerance for violations of civil rights, including, quote, dangerous and unfair practices of men in girls' sports. And legal guidance by federal courts across the country, including in Tennessee versus Cardona, the case that vacated the Biden administration's interpretation of Title IX, which held, quote, there are two sexes, male and female. Redefining sex to include gender identity contravenes the plain text of Title IX, which sought to level the playing field between men and women. Expanding the definition of discrimination would eviscerate the statute and render it largely meaningless, end quote. And still, the Minnesota State High School League has made no indication of intent to change its policy, allowing males to play on girls' teams, which has made it the subject of one of two federal investigations by the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. To be sure, any legislation or legal interpretation seeking to undermine the protections afforded to girls make a mockery of their achievements and gains over the last few decades. Advocating for females against aggressive attempts to push them out of their sports is always the right thing to do. Our daughters deserve better than what they're getting from Minnesota school districts, athletic associations, and even the state government. For those who disagree, I have a question. Which of the incredibly talented female athletes on any Minnesota high school team deserves to be displaced by a male competitor? The answer is none of them. House File 12 is a necessary step forward in reaffirming and strengthening the protections female athletes should enjoy under state and federal law. That's the best way to give girls the opportunity to excel. Thank you, members.
Thank you for your testimony. We have Dr. John Odom. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Doctor.
Yes, you got it right.
Go ahead and proceed.
Yes. Madam Chair, committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. A little background, I'm a physician here in Minnesota.
Your name also, please, yes. For the record. Thank you.
John Odom. Played Division I football. A little background about myself. Went to medical school at University of Colorado. Did my residency here at Hennepin County. My last year of training was in the specialty of sports medicine. I've been practicing sports medicine ever since. I do a lot of team coverage, both for adolescents, high schools, and colleges. I've been the head team physician for the Olympic Training Center and the Olympic teams for the last 15 years. I have four kids, two boys, two girls, that have all competed in high school sports locally here in Minnesota, and recently I was on our local school board. Professionally speaking, when we look at kind of this issue and I look at the participation of transgender males within female sports, I do think there's an unfair advantage there. I think medically speaking, whatever you do, you know, in terms of hormone manipulation, that sort of thing, I think there will still exist an advantage, and again, a competitive advantage. And I think that competitive advantage will be really in two main categories, both strength and endurance. And for that reason, I don't think it's a fair kind of level playing field, if you will. And then beyond the competitive advantage, I think there is safety issues, as was kind of spoken about before. I think there's serious safety issues with that situation as well. And again, I think we've worked very hard to allow females to compete at a very high level with great reward, and I think this would undermine that progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. And next we have Dr. Jill Simmons. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Jill Simons. I'm a board-certified pediatrician, and I've been in medical practice in Minnesota for over 20 years. I trained under the Pediatric Sports Medicine Pioneers at the University of Wisconsin, who created the first pediatric-based sports medicine fellowship program in the United States. Myself and my fellow residents were team doctors for the UW Athletics. I have significant training in sports medicine as it applies to pediatrics. Today, though, I'm not just speaking to you as a medical expert. I'm speaking to you as an athlete who was once a youth athlete, a high school athlete, a collegiate athlete, and just 4 days ago was in Miami running the women's half marathon. I know firsthand how essential female sports are to the health and well-being of girls. While in private practice here in Minnesota, I've taken care of hundreds of young female athletes, and I say to you, girls are harmed when boys are allowed to compete in girls' sports. Not only does allowing boys to compete on girls' teams pose a physical safety risk and take spots away from girls, a few months ago, the UN released a report stating that the lack of protecting single-sex spaces and concerns for fairness and safety contributes to girls self-selecting out of sports. We know girls who participate in sports have higher self-esteem, less mental health problems, better academic performance, are more likely to graduate, and are less likely to have an unintended pregnancy. From the American Academy of Pediatrics' own website, quote, around age 13, most boys are taller, heavier, faster, stronger, bigger, and more powerful than most girls. These discrepancies may place girls at great risk for injury and or an unfair disadvantage in sports, end quote. Boys have a physical advantage over girls even before puberty. Pediatricians like me use CDC growth charts that are unique for boys and girls because from infancy, boys are on average bigger than girls. Prepubertal, they have many other physical advantages over girls, including more lean muscle mass. Finally, safety and fairness can be ensured very easily, safely, and privately with the protocols we already have in place for youth athletes. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and move here.
All right, we do have another testifier, but we're going to do that in just a little bit that's connected with Chair Scott. So thank you, Chair Scott. Members, you have written materials provided by testifiers and those who have submitted written testimony in lieu of public comment. Those are in your folders and will be included in the record. We do have several testifiers here today. I'm going to call those testifiers up two at a time, and then I'll announce the next two on deck so you can be ready. I will remind each of you to keep your comments to 2 minutes, and we'll be keeping time. We have legislative assistant here who's got the time card, so please kind of glance up and down. He's going to give you a 30-second kind of warning and then the two-minute warning, and we will hold to those times because I do want to get all of our testifiers in. It's important to hear from everybody. I will also remind each of the testifiers to first identify yourself and any organization you might represent and then proceed as I recognize you. For any testifier who is a minor, you may provide only your first name if you prefer. So we're going to start public testimony. We'll start with Katie DeWitt. And excuse me if I really massacre your names. I'm not going to try to. And Linda Hochman, we're going to say. Those two can come up and sit in the seats. And then on deck, we have Ainsley and Leanna. So we'll start with Katie DeWitt. If you introduce yourself for the record and proceed, and then again, keep an eye up here for the two-minute warning.
Chair Bennett and members, my name is Katie DeWitt, Athletic Director and Dean of Students at Concordia Academy. I previously served as a high school coach, head college coach, and associate athletic director at an NCAA institution and played both NCAA Division I and Division III basketball. I'm here today in support of Preserve Girls in Sports Act to ensure that opportunities will exist for biological women and girls for years to come. Allowing biological men to participate in opportunities created for women would not only set us backwards in terms of progress in women's sports, it would compromise the physical and emotional safety of the young women we are hoping to inspire in the next generation of female athletes. In sports, decisions have been made due to the distinct and unique biological differences of men and women. Hurdles are shorter, volleyball nets are lower, qualifying times are slower, basketballs are smaller, and tees are closer to the pin. We are living in a time where women's sports is blessed to see the generational talent of Simone Biles, Caitlin Clark, and Sydney McLaughlin-Aroney, along with so many others that we would not see if they were expected to compete against men and their specific discipline because of the physiological limitations and differences in gender. We must not undermine years of progress surrounding fairness and equity, which are the result of the intentional hard work of champions and pioneers of women's sports. We must make thoughtful and careful decisions regarding all people instead of making decisions that make women political pawns in the fight for inclusion. I realize this is a nuanced topic, and the desire of my heart is not to harm any person or group of people, but rather share the importance of considering the progress of women's sports that we have made in terms of visibility, equity, and opportunity. Women can achieve greatness if we continue to push the needle forward and provide a platform and opportunities for them to succeed. I can only imagine how my life and experiences would have been different had I not been afforded the opportunity for a safe physical and emotional space to flourish using my gifts. I believe with my current role, it's my responsibility to ensure that the opportunities I had are preserved for young female athletes that I'm inspired by on a daily basis. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have Linda. And Linda, I'm going to let you pronounce your last name. So go ahead and proceed. Start with your name, please.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Linda Hochman. I'm a former athlete, mother of two female athletes, a coach and teacher of young ladies, and a school board member. I'm passionate about the importance of sports and a fierce protector of female athletes. I'm deeply concerned about the future of girls' sports because in Minnesota schools, we are currently limited in the protection we can provide to female athletes. Allowing boys to compete against girls will only limit safe spaces for girls, endangering their privacy and safety while risking litigation and federal education funding. As a mother and coach, I'm aware of the challenges girls face. I've comforted girls who have poured their hearts into sports only to be told they didn't make the team. True, this is part of sports, but to learn resilience and determination, how do you explain that loss when those limited positions are given to boys? Boys who clearly have better opportunities for prizes and scholarships in men's athletics. As a school board member, I am hearing from parents whose daughters are heartbroken because boys are allowed to invade girls' teams. The girls don't want to and shouldn't have to compete against boys. It's not just about fair competition. Their right to a safe field of play, even their privacy in locker rooms, is being disregarded. There must be clear and consistent guidance so parents can be assured that their daughters are playing on female-only teams. In my conversations with school board members from around the state, there is concern about the inconsistent guidance, unclear definitions, and frustration in how to protect girls in sport. The lack of clarity is jeopardizing federal funding. It is, quote, the policy in the United States to rescind all funds from educational programs that deprive women and girls of fair athletic opportunities, unquote. As a school board member, what am I to do? The current situation in Minnesota is ambiguous for policymakers, dangerous for girls, and set to restrict federal dollars necessary to provide a quality education for all students. 51 years ago, women fought for Title IX to become federal law and ensure that girls and women have equal access to athletic opportunities. It's our responsibility to follow their leadership and protect the integrity of female sports. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We are now, we're going to get our remote testifier in, but I'll have Ainsley and Leanna go ahead and come on up and sit up there. We have Dr. Quentin Van Meter, who's part of Chair Scott's team, who is here remotely, so we're going to get to him right now, and we'll cross our fingers that this works, right? All right, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, can you hear us okay?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, so you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, my name is Quentin Van Meter. I'm a pediatric endocrinologist, board certified, practicing for 47 years in this subspecialty. I'm a member of the American College of Pediatricians, for immediate past president of that organization, and I'm speaking as an endocrinologist and scientist. I just want to present some basic information in regard to women and competitive sports. First of all, I want to say that biology matters. Sex is binary, determined at the moment of conception. There is no blend of male and female in terms of the biologic basis for sex. The use of the word intersex is often brought in as an issue that should be considered in this organizational concept, but there is only one circumstance where XY humans are female, and that is the complete androgen insensitive syndrome, which is birth occurrence is about 1 in 24,500 births, or an incidence of 0.04%. So that is a tiny population of a very specialized circumstance where this law would not necessarily apply. The Y chromosome instigates changes from the very first day. All female internal genital structures are eliminated by the Y chromosome. The male body is programmed to respond to the effects of testosterone in all organ systems. The die is cast with bone formation and ratios of tendon lengths and muscle bulk well before the onset of puberty. Boys are built to labor and fertilize eggs, and women are built to become pregnant and go into labor. This is all designed to facilitate the biologic roles of male and female in the human species. Males at any age are distinct from females at any age at the cellular level, at the organ level, and at the over-physiologically functioning level. Halting puberty at the first onset in a male does not erase the physical differences between males and females. Subtracting testosterone from the male body artificially to prevent the normal physiologic changes that testosterone induces in the biologic male does not make that body a female body. It remains a male body with all the innate design of a male, with significant advantages in strength and endurance that eclipse those same attributes of a normal female body, even when that male body is artificially devoid of testosterone due to pharmacologic interventions. blocking puberty in a male and then providing him with estrogen to feminize the appearance of his body by stimulation of breast tissue and deposition of body fat does not undo the skeletal and muscle distribution that is present before puberty. A male can't become a female under any circumstances ever. A man can claim to be female, but that doesn't make him one. Moreover, men should not be allowed to compete in a single-sex sporting event as if they were truly a female. If girls in a single-sex sporting competition are not protected from competing with male body athletes, they will be placed at risk for severe injury and humiliation. No wrestling competition would allow a contest between a 230-pound male high school wrestler who happens to identify himself as a 110-pound person if he's facing a 110-pound wrestler. Pitting biologic males against females under the guise of transgender identity is no different. Please clear your minds of these medical inaccuracies and support the cause of victimized women athletes who, up until recently, enjoyed legal protection in athletic events from abuse by men. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. So we'll go back to our regular list of testifiers. We have Ainsley and Leanna up. We'll start with Ainsley, and then if Rebecca, Della Hunt, and Katie could be on deck. But Ainsley, go ahead. You're Ainsley? All right, perfect. Go ahead and introduce you for the record and begin, and remember to watch up here for the two-minute mark.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ainsley, and I am a Minnesota athlete. I play volleyball. I am here on behalf of many other girls, friends, and teammates. Why? Because many other girls in Minnesota are fearful of the consequences of our message, which is simple. And we don't ask for much considering how far we have come and how hard my grandmother fought to get us here. Our message is only this: girls belong in girls' sports. However, many girls are fearful of consequences like retaliation at school, losing their spots on teams, or even friendships, just for standing up for our rights. Our rights to exist as young girls who will one day be women with daughters of our own. There should be no fear in asking you to preserve one of our country's most basic rights, equality. Without this bill, girls could be forced to sit on sidelines by men and boys who take their place. That leaves us to believe that girls in Minnesota just don't matter. My good friend was on the USA volleyball team last summer. She told me, quote, "I sat behind the 6'4" man serving the volleyball and thought, I could never receive that. My friend is a 6'3" guard." What is the point of girls' and boys' teams if males can play on girls-only teams? Members, fellow Minnesotans, this isn't easy for me. I'm a very agreeable person who hates controversy, but I love truth. I thought about my volleyball team, the little girls I babysit, my own hopes and dreams, and one day being a mother of daughters. I want to say I fought for them and their future. Members, please preserve our safety and the opportunity we are entitled to under the law in women's sports and pass House File 12. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we have Leanna. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Hi, my name is Leanna Chambers. In high school, I was a tennis player and a competitive swimmer. The harder I trained, the longer I practiced, the better an athlete I became. I would train my lungs to breathe in more air at just the right time to expand my lung capacity to become a better swimmer. In tennis, I would train to build muscle mass so I could hit harder and run faster. Both of these examples of what I need to train, practice, and work hard to do, men have a biological, natural, physical advantage. But this is not just about a physical advantage. This is a privacy issue as well. Athletes share locker rooms, they share showers. I have two younger sisters who are 11 and 12 years old. If they came home and told me that there is a biological male in the same room they showered in, I would hope it was some sort of mistake. I'm not only an older sister, but a younger sister as well. I have two older brothers who are 1 and 2 years older than me. While we've grown up in the same home, doing the same activities, they could easily outrun me, easily overpower me. I love doing sports in school, and I would strongly encourage any girl to do so as well. But I can say that I would personally be strongly discouraged to do the sport I love to do if I had to compete against someone with an unfair advantage. There's been many cases of men competing against men in sports, and without much success or fame, they later transition, they identify as female, and then succeed. Unfortunately, there have been cases where innocent women have been, injured in this process. I hope there needs to be no more broken bones to see that this is a broken system. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Next, we'll have come up Rebecca Della Hunt and Katie. And then on deck, we will have Leslie Larson and Laurel Audette. So far, got one right here right now. And then, so we'll start with Rebecca Della Hunt. Go ahead.
Chair Bennett, Chair Scott, and members, thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Rebecca Della Hunt, and I work as the Director of Public Policy with Minnesota Family Council. We support protecting girls' opportunities in athletics in Minnesota, and we ask you to vote yes on HF 12. For many of us, athletics in middle and high school were pivotal to our development as contributing members of society. Title IX made it possible for girls to have access to athletic opportunities, just as boys have historically had this opportunity. But in Minnesota, male access to female athletics has been prioritized over girls' access and opportunities to their own athletics. This favoritism is inequality for girls. One male making the team not only means that an individual girl does not make the team, which is enough to make it wrong, but it gives one team a systematic advantage over competitors, and it impacts girls' access to play the sport, recruitment and scholarship opportunities, and achievement. Girls are expected to comply in silence. If she speaks up for herself, for her female teammates in her league, she may be subject to correction or re-education. A coach and director of a private girls' travel softball club in Minnesota, which serves over 400 fast-pitch athletes, submitted anonymous testimony in your packets in support of HF 12. That testimony was anonymous so that those 400 girls' opportunities to play on that club are not jeopardized by their leader representing them to those girls' own government. The fact that our cultural climate has gotten to the point that a coach submits anonymous testimony to support the club's ability to even operate in Minnesota should be concerning. We typically tell girls to use their voice on matters of injustice, but not on this issue. On this issue, girls must be quiet and comply with the lie to the detriment of their opportunities athletically, academically, and possibly their own physical safety. This bill is a great start to fixing an issue of justice for girls. I ask you to vote in support of HF 12. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And do we have Kate, a high school track player, in the room? There she is. Go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Bennett, thank you for having me. My name is Kate, and I'm a long-distance runner. I'm here to speak in support of HF 12. It is such a privilege to compete as a high school athlete in track and field. As all of you know, in order to excel in anything in life, it is crucial to put in countless hours of hard work. As a long-distance runner, putting in miles at practice is how I train for meets. This entails preseason training, early morning practices, and after-school practice. What I'm trying to say is it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. In the past track seasons, winning my races and setting new PRs is always such a highlight. If a male athlete entered a girls' race and stole that experience from me or one of my teammates, I'd be so disappointed. It's an honor for girls to make new records in sports, but it's deceitful and dishonest for boys to steal accomplishments from girls. It's not fair to hold female athletes to records that men set, so why should they be allowed to set new records within ours? It's unfair to girls, and it's against the value of having female sports to begin with. Please vote yes on HF 12. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Leslie Larson and Laurel Audette. And then on deck, we have Aaron Meltzer and Sarah Sturr. So we'll start with Leslie Larson.
Hi, my name is Leslie Larson, and I'm a mother of five active school-age children. Four of them are girls. They play hockey, soccer, and cheer. Biological girls must have the right to play against other biological girls. There is an inherent difference between boys and girls, including muscle, strength, and speed. Last summer, this disparity led to my 11-year-old daughter, Lizzie, being severely hurt during a soccer game. A boy on the opposing team forcefully pushed my daughter to the ground while she had the ball, causing her arm to break. At the hospital, Lizzie's arm was casted right below her shoulder all the way to her fingers. She had to discontinue both soccer and hockey while she healed. During recovery, the doctor advised surgery on her wrist to redirect future growth. We declined the invasive approach, and we opted for additional casting longer instead. Almost a year later, where we are today, her wrist is not aligned and will forever be damaged. Lizzie has played soccer since she was 3 years old, and this was her first major sports injury, a shove to the ground caused senselessly by a boy who was faster than her, a boy who was stronger than her, and a boy who was bigger than her. We must protect our girls in all the ways that we are able, we must. It is our job as mothers, as sisters, and as women. Thank you for allowing me to stand up for our girls today.
Thank you. Next, we have Laurel Audette.
Hello, I'm Laurel Audette, a ninth grade student from St. Paul, involved in swimming and track for my high school. Thank you for having me here today. Female athletes across Minnesota work incredibly hard to succeed in their sport and for biological males to be allowed to compete alongside women in the same events and possibly come out on top. Taking women's places is unfair and ruins the enjoyment of sports for women. In December of 2023, I was in a ski accident in which I broke 5 bones in my back, fractured a rib, punctured a hole in my lung, broke my thumb, tore my MCL, and had a subarachnoid hemorrhage. It was so severe, I had to be taken by ambulance to one hospital and airlifted to another. Eager to get back in the pool, I returned to practice a few weeks later, more for physical therapy than for training purposes. My practices looked a lot different than before, as I could only kick with a board for the first week and could only do a couple of lengths before needing a break. Eventually, I was able to start training again, but my body had been through so much trauma that my times and meets were only going up and my self-confidence was going down. I had lost so much of my technique and endurance, and I'm still, a year later, working to get it back. During my freshman swim season, I worked incredibly hard and finally began to see results as some of my time started to drop. I was able to make the section team, but despite my hard work, I did not make it to state. I've seen my two older brothers swim at the state meet, and it has become a goal of mine. I cannot imagine having a biological male swim against me and take a spot in the top 16 that go to finals after all of the hard work, time, and dedication I've given to overcome adversity. Males are scientifically stronger, faster, have greater lung capacity, and have greater muscle mass than females. I would be absolutely devastated to see my dream awarded to someone who will always have an advantage over me. This spring, I'm going to do track for the first time. Watching biological males who may be new to the sport like I am finish before me and take opportunities from me would be very hard. I acknowledge that there will always be someone better than me. This is not the issue. The problem is that I have no control over how my body is made, and if I am racing people who are built to be males, they will have an advantage in winning. This fact ruins women's sports. Why should we work hard to succeed when our achievements will just be stolen? For the safety and fairness of women's sports, please consider accepting this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Aaron Meltzer and Sarah Sturr, and they can both come up and sit in the chairs. And then on deck, we have Gretchen, and I'm, say it again, Wynn, and Jess Braverman or Braverman. Well, they'll be on deck. So we'll start with Aaron Meltzer, please. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Aaron Meltzer. I'm a trans athlete here today opposing Bill HF-12. I've been trans my whole life. I started playing sports as soon as I could walk. That means the entire time I've been playing sports, I've been trans. As a lifelong athlete with a successful high school sports career, I know the sacrifice and hard work high school athletes put in. The hard work and sacrifice I put into sports played a critical role in my personal growth and development. It would be life-altering to take that experience away from trans girls. They'll be robbed of formative childhood experiences, self-confidence building, deeply impactful friendships, mentorship, competition, the list goes on and on. Trans girls deserve friendship and mentorship. They deserve to push themselves like every athlete does. Trans girls deserve to compete where they feel comfortable. They deserve to compete with girls because they are girls. As an adult, I have continued to play sports and even learned some new ones. About 6 years ago, I started playing hockey. First just pickup and then eventually in a league. All through those 6 years, I've been playing alongside trans women. They're my teammates, my friends. They push me to be a better hockey player and a better person. Never once have I felt threatened or less than because of their presence. In fact, I have felt braver and more encouraged. It is an honor to play alongside them. Trans girls deserve to compete where they feel comfortable. Governing bodies such as the Minnesota State High School League, the NCAA, and even the Olympics invite trans women and girls to compete where they belong, with women and girls. The state of Minnesota should be no exception to inclusion and equity among athletes of all gender identities. For me, sports are a safe haven. My teams feel like home. So many adolescents need sports to be that safe haven away from other challenges in their lives. Wrestling with identity can be an extremely isolating challenge, and we should not be risking trans lives by barring them from competing. I've met my best friends playing sports and found mentors in my coaches. As an adult, I've been accepted as trans in all of my athletic endeavors, and I want that for trans girls across the state of Minnesota. I urge you to do everything in your power to stop this bill so trans girls can thrive in sports. Trans girls deserve to compete. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Sarah Sturr. Go ahead and proceed.
My name is Sarah Sturr, and I stand before you as a 38-year-old athlete. In my athletic career, I have played professional women's football, participated in the Gay Softball World Series tournament, and was the inaugural winner of the non-binary category at the Gary Bjorklund Half Marathon in Duluth. But before I was an adult, I was a transgender kid growing up in the 90s in District 23A who loved playing sports. Like many kids in Minnesota, I started skating shortly after I could walk, and by high school, I was a four-sport athlete. Thanks to Title IX, I was able to play on the boys' football team starting in seventh grade. As a child, participating in sports gave purpose to my life as I navigated understanding my trans identity. On the field, I knew exactly who I was, an athlete and a teammate. Sports were my sanctuary. My coaches and my teammates were my village that got me out of bed, to school, and to practice. These teammates turned into lifelong friends, and 30 years after I started my first team sport, I'm still friends with and pen pals with my first coach, Mr. O, and still use the life lessons he taught us on the field today. You will rob Minnesota transgender student athletes of this experience by passing HF 12. I've had the opportunity to coach transgender student athletes at the high school level and manage them currently through my work. I can assure you that these kids have no hidden agendas. They are literally just kids being kids, trying to finish their homework and make it to practice in time. I see them thriving, making friends, elevating their teams, and becoming leaders through their participation in student athletics. The choice in front of you today is this: are you going to bully the children of Minnesota? Will you continue to waste time with this bill that will certainly be vetoed by our governor? Or will you uphold your oath to the Minnesota State Constitution's Bill of Rights, Section 2, the promise that no member of the state shall be disfranchised or deprived of any rights or privileges secured to any citizen? Will you choose to be an advocate for the students of Minnesota? I hope you will continue the standard of inclusion and the legacy of Title IX in Minnesota by opposing HF 12. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Gretchen and Jess. I'm going to let them say their last names so we get that correct. And then on deck, we have Obi Ballinger and Jorge Carrillo. And so we'll start with Gretchen. And please introduce yourself and proceed.
Committee members, for your time today. My name is Gretchen Nguyen. I use she and her pronouns. And I'm here today as a regular Minnesotan mom opposing House File 12. I wish I was here today to tell you about my kids under different circumstances, because I assure you that the least interesting thing about my children is their gender. I know that I'm biased, but my kids are exceptional, smart, hilarious, and interesting. They speak two languages, excel in math, and love science. They get excited on days they have art and gym. They participate in chess club, soccer, swimming, cross country, and debate club. They enjoy drawing and potion making. They love to play Brawl Stars and every board game known to kid. So yeah, the gender of my kids should not be the first thing anyone is interested in. But somehow, their gender has become the most talked about thing and scrutinized thing by strangers. Discrimination in sports and any area for trans and non-binary folks signals to my kid that it's okay for people who don't know them to debate and theorize about their body as if it's a hypothetical idea and not their own actual private body. Sports are about so much more than just winning or competition. They teach teamwork, resilience, and how to bounce back from challenges. They give kids confidence, a sense of belonging, and a safe place to have fun with friends. I want my daughter to have the chance to play sports for all of those reasons, the same reason every parent wants their kid to play. The idea that trans athletes don't belong in sports or that their participation is a threat is deeply harmful and simply untrue. I want to be clear. My daughter isn't asking for special treatment, nor are any other trans or non-binary people who simply want to participate. They're just asking for the same opportunities as every other person to play, to grow, and to feel like they belong. I need to also point out that there isn't a world where I will be sharing private medical information about either of my children with any school official or regulator who isn't part of their actual healthcare team. Just last year, in a bipartisan way, this legislative body amended the Minnesota Health Records Act to make it stricter than ever before, and it is unreasonable to believe that the health records of minors would be the exception to this. My hope is that by testifying here today, you can show people the humanity behind this issue. This is about real people, real families, and real kids like mine. My daughter deserves to feel valued, supported, and seen for who they are. And so does every trans and non-binary person.
Thank you. Next we have Jess. Braverman. Okay, thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name is Jess Braverman, and I'm the legal director at Gender Justice. I'm also a lifelong girls and women's sports participant, and I'm speaking in opposition to this bill. There are many obstacles when it comes to girls' sports, but participation by trans kids is not one of them. It goes without saying that forcing girls to undergo an inspection of their internal and external reproductive anatomy in order to participate in sports will not increase participation in sports. It will not make girls want to play sports. I'm relieved to see that language was removed from this bill in response to public pressure, but enforcement of this bill would still be problematic. We should not be asking kids whether they have internal reproductive system, which now, or for prepubescent kids, will in the future produce, transport, and utilize eggs for fertilization. Again, this will not increase the number of girls who have access to or participate in girls' sports. If the only thing you have done in your power as a lawmaker to support girls' sports is to discriminate against trans kids, then what you care about is discriminating against trans kids, not about supporting girls' sports. Trans kids participate in sport for the same reason their cisgender peers do, for the physical and mental benefits, for the sense of community, and for friendship. The Minnesota High School League has been trans-inclusive since 2015, and for over a decade, we have led the nation in girls' participation in sport. It is demonstrably untrue that trans participation reduces girls' participation in sport. It's just not the case. If you voted against free school lunches, then you don't support kids getting the nutrition they need to participate in sport. If you support rollbacks of sexual harassment protections in schools, you don't support student athletes being protected in sport. Here in Minnesota, our Constitution protects trans athletes. This bill is illegal. The U.S. Constitution protects trans athletes and even mandates cisgender boys be allowed to participate in girls' sports, so this bill violates the U.S. Constitution. This bill also violates Title IX. Numerous federal courts around the country have found that Title IX protects trans kids, and Trump can't undo that with an executive order. This bill is bad for Minnesota and for all girls. It's unlawful, and I urge everyone to vote against it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Obi Ballinger and Jorge Carrillo. And then on deck, we have Sarah Spafford Freeman and Kat Roan. And again, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your names. So we'll start with Obi.
Hi, my name is Obi Ballinger, and I'm the founding organizer of PRISM, a multiracial and multi-faith network for LGBTQ equality here in Minnesota. I've also served for 15 years as a pastor in the United Church of Christ, serving congregations in Edina and near Cottage Grove. Every Sunday, worship in many UCC churches begins with a saying, no matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. We believe that every person of every race, class, gender, age, and identity is fearfully and wonderfully made, as the scripture says, in the image of God. In both churches I've served, I've ministered to transgender youth who want what everyone wants, to belong, to learn, to grow, and play in supportive environments, and to participate as themselves without having to hide or deny who they are. This is why I oppose House File 12 and other such measures that declare unwelcome the trans youth that God has called beloved and called us to welcome. On Monday night, I gathered here at the Capitol with 100 others in the bitter cold to grieve the shocking murder of the black trans young adult Sam Nordquist and to keep vigil with his Minnesota family. We don't know yet the full circumstances in his case, but we do know that beloved trans people like Sam are 4 times more likely than others to suffer from violent crime. Trans youth are also at significantly increased risk of the mental health struggles that come from constant challenges to a person's worth or belonging. Youth sports are one of the ways that trans people can develop resilience and experience belonging, as well as learning, growing, and playing in supportive environments. Rather than addressing harms against them this legislation adds to the bullying that many trans youth face on a daily basis, doubling down on the false message that there is something wrong with youth who practice integrity by living according to their God-given gender identity. To repeat what the Holy Spirit tells the disciple Peter in the book of Acts, do not call unclean what God has called clean. Stop this unnecessary bill that adds to a climate of anti-trans discrimination, violates the image of God's belovedness in every person, and heightens the likelihood of harm against the trans youth I know and love. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Jorge here? Okay, and then on deck we have Sarah Freeman and Kat Rohn. Ed.
Sorry, I'm a little out of breath. I was running from the third stairs. My name is Jorge Carrillo Juarez. I am here on my own volition. My name is Jorge Carrillo Juarez, and I am a happily married Hispanic gay man, a longtime resident of Minnesota since 2000. I graduated from Melrose High School in 2017. I obtained my bachelor's in Morehead in 2020 and have recently been accepted to a master's program in St. Paul. I currently reside in Eagan. When I was in high school, I had the chance to be alongside trans students, and I had no judgment of them because at the time, my values were, if you're not hurting yourself or anyone else, then do what you want. I am here to speak against House File 12, in which it states, if there is a dispute as to whether a student is of the female sex, the student must present a signed physician statement indicating the student's sex that is based solely on, one, the student's internal and external reproductive anatomy, two, the student's naturally occurring level of testosterone, and three, an analysis of the student's chromosomes. Because this bill is too vague and it does not address an issue affecting students, these are my questions to address. Who can make the disputes? Students, parents of students, teachers, taxpayers. If there is a dispute and a student is outed, who can guarantee their safety within the school from bullies? As a student who came out as gay in high school, I was not afraid of others. But I know people who cannot come out because family members are homophobic or transphobic. Students go through different hormone levels as they go through puberty. And in young girls, hyperandrogenism, and I'm sorry if I said that wrong, may be present, which is a high testosterone level in young girls, according to the Cleveland Clinic. This just screams HIPAA violations. I want to ask how many of us have had an analysis to find out our own chromosomes. The bill only targets female sports teams and not male sports teams. Why? Finally, as a longtime resident of Minnesota, I have experience working with all people, and trans people deserve to be respected because they are human just like you and I. To any trans kid listening right now, you have a life to create of your own, and we won't ever go back. With care. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Sarah Freeman and Kat Rohn, if they would come sit in the chairs. And then on deck, we have Dr. Eric Hoagland and Adosh Uni. So we'll start with Sarah, if we could.
Hello, my name is Sarah Spafford Freeman. I'm a public schools parent and advocate, a lifelong athlete, the mother of two girls playing sports, and the coach, the proud Parks and Rec coach of dozens of others. And I'm here to oppose HF 12. I am not here to indulge the notion that this bill is about sports or protecting young women and girls. I will not debate the dignity of Minnesota's trans children, which is innate. I will not dignify the premise that trans people are a threat to anyone, as this bill implies. I'm here to remind you, the Education Policy Committee, that Minnesota's public schools face numerous serious and urgent challenges, chronic underfunding, critical teacher shortages, and declining academic outcomes, just to name a few. And every minute you spend on issues like this that you have manufactured to fight another front in the culture wars is a minute wasted. HF 12 doesn't protect girls and young women. It targets them for additional scrutiny of their bodies, likely harassment, and possible violence. If you really want to protect women and girls, you'll pursue policies to reduce these threats, not inspire them. This bill isn't a serious policy response to an actual problem. It is a way to score cheap political points at the expense of children. One thing I've taught my own kids is how to spot a bully. It's not always black and white. Very few things are. They're not binary either. But if you're a person holding a position of power and authority, say holding state elected office, for instance, and you're punching down at kids, make no mistake, you are the bully. Education policy is where all the good stuff can and should happen. This committee is one of the few in this legislative body devoted exclusively and explicitly to the interests of Minnesota's kids and future. Trans kids deserve to be part of these important deliberations, but not like this. No child deserves this. I urge you to oppose HF 12, reject the misogyny it reflects, and focus instead on the real urgent issues facing our public schools. Thank you.
Thank you. And to the testifiers, I am giving some grace on expression, but we do have to be careful in calling names and I just won't go further than that. But Kat Roan, you're next. Thank you. And on deck again, Dr. Eric Hoagland and Adosh Uni.
Thank you. My name is Kat Roan, and I serve as Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota, our state's largest LGBTQ advocacy organization serving this state since 1987. There is a message that many of our LGBTQ youth are receiving with alarming frequency these days. You don't belong here. It's not just in the words of school bullies, it's at our highest levels of government. We know that participation in athletics has demonstrated benefits for physical and mental health that are important for every child's development. Why would we want to deny anyone these opportunities? When trans kids aren't allowed to play as who they are, they stop participating. This bill singles out trans kids, but the harms of the bill will be felt much more widely. Last year, a school board member in Utah publicly posted photos and speculated that a 16-year-old cisgender basketball player in the Granite School District was transgender simply because of her larger build. The girl faced harassment and threats, eventually requiring police protection. Utah's governor, Spencer Cox, a Republican, said the incident embarrassed the state. This bill invites the same. It gives permission for people to scrutinize and harass young athletes. It opens the door to unwanted and unnecessary medical testing. It ignores more than a decade of evidence that Minnesota's current policies are working just fine. And it tells kids, trans kids, that they are not welcome in sports they love at a time when they need our care and support more than ever. Everyone deserves a chance to play, and everyone should feel like they belong. I urge you to vote no.
Thank you. Next, we have Dr. Eric Hoagland and Adosh Uni. And on deck, we have Diane Smith and Tiffany Strabala. So, Dr. Eric Hoagland, we'll start with you, if you could introduce yourself.
Thank you. Hello. My name is Dr. Eric Hoagland. I'm a board-certified family medicine physician with North Memorial Health for 17 years. In that context, my main focus is primary preventative healthcare. I also specialize in gender medicine, and many of my patients, including many youth, are transgender or gender diverse. I also seem to be the only physician here who actually works with transgender youth. As this committee is likely already aware, the wording of this bill was changed significantly at the 11th hour, primarily with a de-emphasis on the medical examination portion. I suspect that this is because the authors themselves realized how untenable this would be, and that some of the more outlandish portions, such as requiring a chromosome analysis, are not something that we do in primary care. But despite the reworked language of the bill, it does not change the fundamental requirement, which is that any girl who is accused of being transgender would then have the burden placed on them to show that they are not. This means going in for and paying for an invasive and embarrassing genital exam against their will. In medicine, we do not force youth to show us their genitalia against their will. This proposal also ignores the many intersex conditions which are common in transgender people, which can make this determination difficult, and it sets no standards for how to make this decision besides one physician's arbitrary judgment call. This bill also makes a fundamental assertion that is deeply flawed, the idea that having a penis inherently makes you better at sports. There is ample research in the medical literature on this topic, which is rarely brought up by proponents of such bills, because it shows that exercise physiology and its connection to topics such as anatomy and hormonal exposure is much more complicated than portrayed. A few highlights are the fact that there is no sex-based difference until puberty. And a history of testosterone exposure, which is not addressed in this bill, does not provide the automatic boost and long-term improvement that is often suggested. Also, because gender care for youth is a protected right in Minnesota, many of the trans girls about whom we are speaking will never have had testosterone exposure due to the use of treatments such as puberty suppression and then full gender affirmation hormone therapy. Trans bodies are not the same as cisgender bodies, and this is well studied and well proven. The point is that this proposal will not accomplish its intended effect, and it would be immoral, difficult, and expensive to implement. I know my time is short. Thank you for your consideration.
Next, Adoshuni.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adoshuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations in the Minnesota Department of Education. I appreciate the opportunity to provide some concerns and thoughts on HF 12. In Minnesota, we support all students, including our transgender students. This proposal does not do that. Minnesota has a long-standing commitment to high-quality education and strong state-level policies that protect every child's right to learn in a safe, supportive, and inclusive educational environment. The Minnesota Human Rights Act clearly protects students' rights to be free from discrimination, including gender identity discrimination. We should ensure that Minnesota remains a state where every person can live freely and authentically, regardless of their gender identity or expression. The Minnesota Department of Education will continue to anchor our state policies that protect human rights and safe and supportive schools for all. We know that safe and supportive learning environments are essential, the essential foundation of academic success. Today, we shared resources and information to support school leaders and educators as they strive to maintain inclusive educational environments. MDE remains committed to supporting and uplifting all our students, educators, and schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Diane Smith and Tiffany Straub. I'm not going to say that. No, let Tiffany introduce herself. On deck, we have Kaya Hill and Dr. Eric Poulin. So we will start with Diane, please.
Thank you, Chair Bennett, members. My name's Diane Smith, and I'm a mother, and I have two children. I'm a wife. I was a teacher for many years, and I was also an athlete. Back in, oh my goodness, many, many years ago, in junior high, we had gym class. And it was very common in gym class when the boys and the girls would play a sport because we really didn't have time to do boys versus boys or girls versus girls. So in gym class, we were all together. And on this one particular day, we were playing broom ball, and a classmate named Dan had the opportunity to swat that ball as hard as he could with his broom, and I happened to be in the way. And let me tell you, when you're hit by a male who has testosterone, because in eighth grade it's running pretty good, in the breadbasket right here, it knocked my air out for so long. I cannot tell you how hard that was to get over. I did not have air. Now, I was very small, and Dan was at least 50 pounds or more than me. and his hormones are not equal to mine. It does not make him better. It does not make me weaker. It just says that we are very, very different. Well, in this case, yes, I was much weaker. When I had children, and I would wrestle my boys when they were little, and I loved it because I won every time. And then they became 13 and 14 year old. And when we'd arm wrestle, that first day that my son, he beat me, he just threw his hands up in the air and said, I won, I won. I finally beat mom. And I was a much older person by then. Boys are stronger. And I don't care if you're calling yourself transgender or whatever it is, whatever title you are given, if you have significantly different hormones than a female. So I am in support of this bill, and I thank Representative Scott. I know that that truth hurts, but you have to look at the facts. And the facts are girls are getting hurt, and there are consequences for that. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Tiffany.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tiffany Strabala. I'm here today as a wife, a mother of four children, and a former coach. Thank you for inviting me. I'm here today in favor of HF 12. I believe it is in the best interest of males and females to compete with their biological sex. It is just common sense and rational thinking that females should compete against females and males against males. I started competitive swimming when I was 10 years old here in the state of Minnesota and continue to swim competitively through my collegiate years in college. My swimming days were some of the best times of my life. It was a true sacrifice on my whole family. Two-a-day practices, traveling every weekend to swim meets, and just the overall expense of the sport. Swimming competitively opened up so many doors and opportunities for me as a young woman. The sport of swimming gave me confidence, leadership opportunities, provided me with long-lasting friendships, and kept me focused on setting goals and achieving them. I can't imagine how different my life would have been if I had to compete in the pool with men. Honestly, I think I would have quit the sport I loved and had such great success at. What's the point? You could work as hard as anyone else, but only be defeated over and over again by a man identifying as a woman. This is nonsense, and it needs to stop. I urge you, elected officials, please vote for HF 12. Please vote for common sense. Please vote to protect women's sports. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Kaya Hill and Dr. Eric Pauline. And then on deck, remotely, we have Kelly Grotting. So we will start with Kaya. Go ahead and proceed.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to share today. I know you've listened to a lot of testimony, so I appreciate you listening to me as well. My name is Kaya Hill. I was a three-sport high school athlete, a two-sport collegiate athlete, a head girls basketball coach, and an assistant athletic director at an area high school. Athletics is one of the things that has significantly shaped who I am today. My athletic experience has shown me one thing very clearly. Boys and girls are different. If that wasn't true, Title IX wouldn't have been needed in the first place. Title IX gave girls the opportunity to have their own teams like the boys had. Those who want to allow transgender athletes or biological males to play in girls' sports refuse to admit the serious consequences that come with this decision. I want to talk through just a few of those consequences. Number one, limited spots. Allowing transgender athletes or biological males to compete in girls' sports takes away spots on a team from biological girls. I worked so hard to earn a spot on each of the teams I played on, and I can't imagine how devastated I would have been had a transgender athlete or a biological male taken my spot. The locker room. It's a very vulnerable place. From changing to showering, etc., it's a space where girls should feel protected. Allowing transgender athletes or biological males access to a girl's locker room is potentially putting girls in a very vulnerable situation. Number three, championships. Winning a conference, section, or state championship is something that requires an incredible amount of work. Girls sacrifice so much to win championships. I can't imagine how crushing it would be for an all-girls team to lose to a team with transgender athletes or biological males who are bigger and stronger. It's biologically unfair.
Number four, injuries. There are physical differences between boys and girls. If there wasn't, the Minnesota State High School League wouldn't have boys basketball and girls basketball, or boys hockey and girls hockey. Why would we think that allowing transgender athletes or biological males to play against girls is physically fair or safe? Finally, I urge each of you to think seriously about what is at stake here. Think of your daughters, granddaughters, nieces, etc. They deserve to be protected. Girls have fought so hard to get to where they are now. If we don't protect girls' sports now, we will be undoing the progress we have fought so hard for. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dr. Poulin, I apologize if I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly.
Thank you. Eric Poulin, a physician, 28 years in primary care. I've heard all the testimony today, and I'd like to speak as a primary care physician to some of the practical matters here. I do support the bill. I have been a volunteer physician for my local wrestling team for many years, and I'm also a volunteer at the Minnesota State High School League and the Sports Advisory Committee as a regional skin specialist related to wrestling. From that perspective, I think that it's very important to define terms when we're speaking on this issue. We have the term female sex used in the bill, and that would be properly understood as biological female sex or biological female. This is an objective definition. It's based on quantitative, testable science. The other term that's often used in this debate is gender identity. This term is not in the bill, but gender identity is the perceived or desired gender of the individual. This is not an objective or testable concept. It's psychological or philosophical in nature. What we're talking about with this bill is we're talking about something objective, testable, provable. In the case of primary care, there's been some talk about the impracticability of these tests that were proposed in the bill. This is not impractical at all as a primary care physician. 99.9% of the cases where there might be a dispute would be easily rectified with one or all of the proposed methods of scientific, testable confirmation. The Minnesota State High School League right now requires physical exams of all athletes every 1 to 3 years, depending on their physical conditions. That's required. Now, a genital exam is not required. It used to be, but that was properly eliminated about 15 years ago. But in a situation like this, if the athlete wants to participate, then it's practical and reasonable to ask them to be examined. Trans girls are not biological females. That is a scientific fact. I agree that no special treatment should be given. Biological females should compete with biological females. Biological males should compete with biological males. That's no special treatment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have a remote testifier, Kelly Grotting. Get that pulled up here.
I'm hoping everyone can hear me.
All right, we can hear you. Go ahead and proceed.
Wonderful.
Introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Chair Bennett and members, my name is Kelly Grotting, and I'm here testifying as a Minnesota hockey player. I have been playing the sport of hockey for 30 years. I started competitively skating at age 8, and I ended up being a multi-sport athlete in my high school. I played soccer, lacrosse, and hockey. Being in a locker room with girls during formidable years, years when bodies are changing, is incredibly important. In terms of gender, we are all equal. We are all going through the same things on and off the ice, on and off the field. What women once fought for decades ago, including Title IX, is now at stake of being wiped out by biological males entering women's sports, and vice versa. I now am a youth hockey coach. I teach 4- and 5-year-olds how to skate. And again, all of our hard work in the past decades has allowed girls and boys sports. I was on the first Armstrong girls hockey team, youth hockey team, I should say. And to think about how that is at stake after what my own coaches fought for is incredibly saddening and disheartening. I beg this room to think about facts over feelings. When you put a boy on a girls' hockey team, there is no longer an even playing field. It is simply not fair, not safe, and it is no longer fun. As a mother, this is incredibly important. As a mother of both a son and a daughter, their safety is at stake. And that is scary. I want to thank this room for listening to my story and my plea, but my closing statement, we have to think about facts over feelings. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, members, that concludes our list of testifiers, and public testimony is now closed, and I thank each person for their testimony. So before we proceed to questions and discussion, there was an amendment submitted by Representative Jordan. I believe the DE6 is your amendment. If so, I recognize you to present your amendment and to move your amendment.
Madam Chair, we're not moving this amendment today.
Okay, thank you, Representative Jordan. So we will move on then to member discussion, and just ask that we kind of keep our comments to the point, keep on track. We have till 5 o'clock, but if we need to come back at 7, we will definitely do that. So we'll go on to member discussion or questions. We have Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Bennett, and thank you, Representative Scott. I have a few questions, and bear with me as my voice is a little raspy here today. I have many levels of concern about this bill, and I want to start with privacy issues surrounding it and concerns.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I can't hear very well. If you could, I know you're struggling like I am with your voice, but if you
thank
could
you.
Up, that would be super
I'll see if I can crank it up a little bit here.
Thank you.
The least of my concerns are around student privacy in this matter. And as we move through, I have a couple of really brief questions that I want to get a better sense of, because the bill isn't particularly clear on some of these layers. And so my first question is, who will be in charge with or charged with this data collection, and where will it be stored?
Chair Scott, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hill, could you be more specific about what data you're talking about?
Representative Hill.
Well, the requirements of the bill, as I understand them to be, having examined it at length, require students to provide personal data. Who will be charged with the collection of that data, and where will it be stored?
I'm sorry, I still didn't hear you. Which kind of personal data? I'm not trying to be difficult. I honestly can't hear. My ears are a little bit plugged.
Maybe get a little closer to your mic, Representative Hill.
I apologize for my
there
voice.
We go.
The question has to do with the protection of students. And the requirements surrounding this bill are going to require student athletes, when asked to provide sensitive and private data to participate on the sports team that they're hoping to participate on. And so my concern is on data privacy and the protection of these students. And I can kind of frame it for you. This is my 25th year in public education, and we take data privacy very, very seriously. And so in this matter, I'm trying to understand how is this concern going to be addressed?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still not exactly clear what you're getting at. If you're talking about when the student has to go get a physical, which they do to play sports in Minnesota, is that kind of what you're thinking in those terms, Representative Hill?
Representative Hill?
Thank you, Chair Bennett. And yes, Representative Scott, that's exactly where it is. In past experiences, student athletes have at times been charged with having a physical to demonstrate that they are in possession of the ability to participate. Then there's a great deal of concern surrounding that data, and I'm wondering how this bill will address that concern.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know I'm always concerned about data privacy, too. This is information that a student will be provided when they go get their physical.
Okay. One other...
Go ahead, Representative Hill.
Chair Bennett and Representative Scott. My other follow-up question has to do with how would this type of data be classified? Do you see this kind of data classified as medical data or student data?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's medical data.
Okay. And thank you, Chair Bennett. And I'm getting to the conclusion of my questions here surrounding data privacy. Both of those classifications of data carry with them some very serious safeguards around privacy and ensuring that that data does not become utilized for dangerous motives. And so, you know, per the testifier earlier who touched on a situation, an unpleasant and very upsetting set of realities that took place in Utah recently, how can you ensure that this data won't lead to harm of a student athlete?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hill, as you know, as if you've been in education for a number of decades, you know that private data, medical data, is never made public. So I'm not sure where we're going with this, but that information that doesn't change. This bill does not change any of that. Students still go to get physicals before they are cleared by the Minnesota State High School League to play sports.
Scott, follow up.
And Chair Bennett, I really appreciate the opportunity to get through my questions here, and I'll leave it for some other folks to ask some questions. But I'm concerned that the very public nature of student athletes and their presence or their absence suddenly from a team and what that could lead to as far as putting a student athlete in peril. And so I'll leave it there and allow for others to get some questions in. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Bennett, and thank you, Representative Scott. Hopefully you can hear me as well. I have a lot of concerns with this bill. My question is with oversight and how this actually works in practice. I think we heard from some testifiers that this bill would be ripe for harassment and scrutiny, not just for transgender girls, but all girls. So I have a few questions. One is, if I'm reading this correctly, this bill gives unlimited right for anyone to challenge any female athlete down to the age of 5. Is that correct?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is putting into current statute in Section 121A. Yes, it does address, notwithstanding any law to the contrary, only female students may participate in an elementary or secondary school level athletic team or sport that an educational institution has restricted to women or girls.
Okay, so we'll start. I
agree.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. So my second question then is in focusing on the elementary level. Who has oversight of the peewee soccer team at the YMCA or the 13,000 girls that participate in Minnesota youth hockey or the girls that swim in a middle school at a private Catholic school? Who has oversight for that? Because the Minnesota High School League does not.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The individual schools are in charge of that right now. This wouldn't change that. It just gives them some guidance when there is a team that is intended for girls only.
But
Representative Green.
Yes, thank you. Sorry. Just to follow up on that, then, I'm not quite measuring up then because it sounds like this is at elementary level. So at the YMCA, there is no physical that is needed. There is no physical that is needed to participate in dodgeball in a sixth grade middle school for just girls. There is nothing on file at the school for the Minnesota High School League that would clear children, especially in our elementary school. So what is the solve there? What are you suggesting that this bill, how they handle this?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Green. So this bill doesn't govern the YMCA swim teams. It doesn't govern that. This is education. And there's a cross-reference here to the Minnesota State High School League. So anything that they govern, that's what this bill covers.
Representative Green, follow-up?
Yeah, just one quick follow-up. So thank you, Chair. So the Minnesota High School League does not cover elementary level students. So that seems to be a contradiction in the bill. And then my second question is, with the Minnesota High School League, there are a lot of athletics that aren't governed by the MSHSL, including girls' ultimate frisbee, figure skating, girls' mountain biking team. High schools, they don't collect physicals for those sports. So who oversees those sports?
Chair Scott.
And those students.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm going to have one of my testifiers address that.
Mm-hmm. Just introduce yourself again, if you would.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Renee Carlson from True North Legal. Representative, thank you for the questions. It's my understanding, based on Representative Scott's bill, that this bill actually is specifically dealing with education and educational, as it says, educational institutions right now. Actually, Subdivision 4 did address and always has only elementary and secondary level schools. So the questions that you're raising are actually what has previously been in the statute. It's my understanding that this bill is just going one step at a time to address what we all know to be true, that men do not belong in girls' sports, and that is not just a theory or an idea. Many doctors today have testified to why sex-based distinctions are necessary. They are also lawful, and they are also now mandated under the new interpretation of Title IX, because the previous administration's interpretation of Title IX has now been vacated. I hope that answers your question.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Respectfully, no, it does not. But I am just concerned, because if anyone has the right to challenge students, there is no governing body of all sports and within the state. The Minnesota State High School League is actually, if you look at the number of athletes, is actually a lot smaller number than the rest of the activity and the engagement with girls in our state, from elementary through middle school through high school. And so my question actually piggybacks a lot on Representative Hill and those privacy concerns, that if we allow the right and the unlimited right for anyone to challenge any student, it's hard to even put my head around. And that what we're laying out for the road and the paveway for harassment and scrutiny of women's bodies and girls' bodies. These are little girls, five-year-olds. So I don't have any more questions. I'm going to end my comment there.
Thank you. Representative Falconer, you're next.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Scott. I just want to start with the genetics. What are you using to determine the genetics of someone that you've labeled in here as female? Just reading from 1.11, female means female as biologically determined by genetics.
Chair Scott.
I was, again, having a hard time. I really apologize. My ears are clogged from being sick. I know your question was about a genetics, but I didn't hear the specific
question. How are you classifying a female?
How am I?
Due to genetics. How are you classifying a female via genetics?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The doctor to my right can answer that question.
Or maybe either that or Dr. Simonson. Whoever's going to answer that, you go ahead and just state your name, please.
Yep, Dr. Jill Simons. So the definition of sex based on male is male or female. We're all X or Y, or XX or XY, but chromosomes determine a sequence of events that either makes our bodies able to produce sperm or egg. Bodies that produce sperm are male, bodies that produce eggs are female. So we've talked about disorders of sexual development, chromosome abnormalities. So you can't base this just purely on chromosomes. It's just one factor. But that's the majority of how sex is determined.
Representative Falconer.
Thank you. Are you a physician?
I am. I'm a pediatrician.
All right. So are you familiar with intersex individuals?
Disorders of sexual development.
Representative.
I'm sorry.
Falconer. Okay. All right. Thank you. So your statement said that we are all, you said all, either XY or XX.
Dr. Simon.
Yeah. Madam Chair. I'm sorry. I meant to say that it defines male or female XY, XX as the basis of causing a sequence of events that's how our bodies are planned, that have a body plan that we either produce sperm or produce egg. Bodies that produce sperm are male, bodies that produce eggs are female. In disorders of sexual development, that is where the design, there's an error that occurs, and you can have misplaced chromosomes, misplaced parts of chromosomes, factors that occur during that process in which a body designed to produce sperm or egg does not produce sperm or egg. And so those are very complicated disorders of sexual development, which Dr. Van Meter spoke about. They're actually very rare. They're about 2 in 10,000. And those could be dealt with at a physical exam by a physician at the beginning of that person's care.
Representative Falconer, follow up.
Yeah. Well, I'd be happy to share a report I've read from the Harvard School of Medicine. It's not actually rare, as you categorize. Between 1% and 2% of the population is intersex of some sort.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point to line 1.13 and 1.4 of the bill, and it addresses those anomalies.
Representative Falconer.
Okay. So, thank you. So a kid gets challenged. Maybe they're too tall. The girl has too many muscles. They jump too far. You know, women in this country face a lot of societal pressures and expectations and discrimination just based off of what their body looks like. So it's easy to understand. And you can just see a lot of the discrimination that goes on with the female athletes in the NCAA, WNBA. I can see a situation in which anybody can then call the question if a student athlete is male or female. They go in and get genetically tested, and they come out. The test comes back with XXY. In some cases, a body can have XY chromosomes in the cell, and the same body can have XX chromosomes in other cells. Where do these kids get to participate in sports?
Chair Scott,
Madam Chair, thank you. Those would be exceptions, and that would be dealt with on the local level like they are now.
Representative Falconer.
And who makes those decisions?
That's a decision made. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I know better. Chair Bennett and Representative Falconer, those decisions are made on the local level between the school, the high school athletic league, and the student and their parents.
Representative Falconer.
How much does genetic testing cost?
Chair Scott.
I have no idea, Madam Chair, how much genetic testing costs. I will say this. This bill is about the obvious thing in front of us, that 80% of the country feels and believes, and their eyes do not deceive them. There's a difference between male and female. That's what this bill is getting at. We're preserving girls' sports because there's an unfair advantage if they're in competition with a male. We're trying to protect our girls. We're trying to protect the 5-year-olds that you mentioned, Representative Green. That's what this bill does. And because the world that we live in right now is demanding so many definitions of everything, and there's a whole new dictionary of terminology that we're having to learn, this bill, we're having to define what a female is, when most people know and trust what their eyes and their brain is telling them.
Representative Keeler.
I'm not done.
Sorry, Representative Falconer.
Although, if you want to ask a clarifying. I'm happy to go back. Okay. So this bill leaves a lot of ambiguity in how it's going to be carried out in practice, as Representative Green mentioned. Apparently any parent, coach, person in the stands can call the question somebody's gender, somebody's sex, and remove them from the court, the ball field, whatever. They then have to go to a doctor's office to get a medically unnecessary genital examination, which is against current practice, as one of our other testifiers attested to. They would have to get a genetic test. Who's paying for this? What about kids that are in scholarship because they cannot afford the school's registration fee? How are they going to pay for these procedures that you're demanding of them?
Chair Scott.
Madam Chair, these cases are not going to be, 100 a day. Okay? These are going to be the exception, not the rule. But because, again, of the environment that we live in right now, we're forced to put into statute a definition of what a real true female is. And most people are not going to have to run to the doctor and get genetic testing to figure that out. They're going to believe what their eyes are telling them and their brain is telling them.
Representative Falconer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I grew up playing hockey. I know some of the most ruthless fans in sports are hockey parents. I can easily foresee scenarios in which hockey parents are going to start calling into question an exemplary player. They could, according to this bill's very general and, to my opinion, not well thought out language, an entire team could just be subjected to question right before a state high school meet. So, I think this is just rife for abuse. It seems to be an unfunded mandate, of which your side of the aisle typically tends to rail against. If school districts or the high school league is going to have to pick up the costs for expensive medical procedures and testing that are not medically necessary, I'll stop with that line of questioning. I come at this from I am a coach for both middle school and high school levels. I have also coached. Perhaps I'm the only member here a trans athlete at the high school level. And I have to, I can, yesterday we heard a teacher say, trust the teacher. Here, trust the coach. This guy didn't fall down. She had a wonderful opportunity to participate in the sport of her choosing with her friends and with her peers. We know that sports provides incredible physical benefit, obviously, but mental benefits of belonging, finding a cohort of your peers, of overcoming rigorous physical challenge, working as a team to do so, working as a team toward common purpose goals. And all these things go into development of kids into adults, that they can bring these life lessons. That's what sports really provides. When we're then threatening girls, whether or not they're trans, whether or not just we have this open, now new, we could potentially have this new open rule where people could just suddenly scrutinize the gender or sex of a kid, we're then threatening girls are going to live under the stochastic terrorism of just having to live with the fact that somebody at any moment could then challenge who they are, force them to go to a doctor. And I just want that recognized, that this is reprehensible.
President Falcon, can you finish up and we'll get you more questions. Thank you.
So I think there's a lot of questions on this for how this in practice is going to be enforced. I think it's going to allow people to double down on the biases and discrimination that women face in sports and subject them to tests they don't want. And this time and age when Minnesota's women's sports are performing phenomenally, we should all be proud of that. I don't know when the last time a men's professional sports team won a championship, but my goodness, the women's teams are racking them up and taking that hardware home. I want everybody to be comfortable performing in the sports where they feel that they belong. And this bill denies kids their opportunity to find their purpose, to find their place in schools, to denies them to find the team that they can identify with, causes significant mental damage when this group of people already face disproportionately higher mental health issues leading to societal ideation and societal attempts. This is a dangerous bill. I really hope everybody here can look inside of your heart, find some compassion, and vote against this. This is not a well-thought-out bill. It's going to lead toward discrimination and harm. And to everybody in this room, if you identify as trans, non-binary, I just want you to know that you are loved, and thank you for being here today.
Representative Keeler, I just want to say we have 5 minutes, and we have a hard stop at 5 o'clock. I'm fully willing to go on. I want full member discussion, but we do have to stop at 5 for our caucus meetings. I want to make sure if we're going to wrap up, we get Lee Jordan in and Representative Scott. But I'm fine. We can recess and go on. So I'll let you all decide how you want to handle it. But we do have Representative Keeler, too. But
Madam Chair, Chair Jordan. I think members of this committee are ready to come back after caucus. And there's many people here who are asking for a full discussion of this bill. And so we are more than happy to come back.
Totally fine. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Then members, Representative Keeler will hang on to you here. I think we should recess now so that we have a moment to get to our caucuses. And then when we come back, we'll start with Representative Keeler. So committee is in recess. The chair calls the committee back to order. Before we're going to resume in just a few minutes or seconds to Representative Keeler, but before we do, Chair Scott is asked to say something. So, yeah. Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I can hear the room isn't quite as full now. I can hear it a little bit better. But I wanted to just address a few things because you had some questions about process. And I learned a great deal in the break from people that work within the schools and learned a lot about process. First of all, on the physical that the high school league has, that I'm like thinking back, oh yeah, my kids had that form. You have this form, you take it to the doctor fills it out. One of the questions on the form is it asks for the physical sex at birth. So that is a question that's on the form. Right now, when there's a question of a kid's age or a kid's residency, those are all issues the high school league deals with. And I think, and this is what I wasn't quite understanding, Representative Falconer talking about, you know, in hockey and how they will challenge all these things. And they do challenge the age of any given hockey player or the residency. And it's done on a fairly regular basis is what my understanding is. And so the process, each school kind of decides how they're going to handle that. But for the most part, if there's a challenge to that student, they still play on the team until an investigation is done and it's determined otherwise. Like with age, they could show a birth certificate, right? So there are ways that maybe that, and these physicals, just a second. So the physicals, when they come back from the doctor's office, the ADs have those on file. So the ADs have this information. And so they would have the information, too, proving the age of the child and all these other things, the age of the athlete. So these things are decided after an investigation when there is a challenge. And so this would be operating under that same process. Is there anything else? That was a question. I don't think so. I think there was a lot of question about the data and the health data. It's all contained on the form that goes back to the AD from the doctor's office on the physical. And just like any other student data, that's kept private. So I hope that clears up some of the questions about process. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Hey, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. I know we've asked a lot of questions, and usually we go back and forth. So if you have anybody on your side, they can ask questions, and then I can go. You don't have any members on your side that want to ask?
You're next on the list.
Okay, thanks. Well, first I'll say one of the testifiers brought up a really good point, that this will not become law, because as we know, we have to have 68 votes on the floor, and this won't. And so I'm interested on when the committee will actually start doing some bipartisan work so that we can get to work and doing some actual good policy that we can turn into law for our students. I know that Representative Lawrence and I have been working on some bipartisan work and put in the ask, and so would like at some point in this committee that we can get to some bipartisan stuff. But to the bill, I have a couple questions. One is about the sports physical, so I'm going to lean into that a little bit more. In the bill, it says that this would be for elementary. It's including elementary students. Many of your testifiers talked about competitive sports. And so my first question is, what competitive sports would we have at an elementary level?
Chair Scott?
My understanding is that this does govern all those sports, whether they're school sanctioned or not. And there are still physical forms, I believe, that a parent, it may be a simple card for a 3 or 5 year old. I know when my kids played like city league sports and stuff like that, they had to fill that out. This bill does not prohibit co-ed teams. My kids played on co-ed soccer till they were, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6. This doesn't prohibit that. And so the only time that it would come into question, I think, is if there's, when there's a team that's exclusively for girls, as laid out in Title IX, when a team is exclusively for girls, and there's a question about one of the players as to whether they're a girl or not.
Representative Keeler?
Thank you, Chair. It doesn't really answer my question, I guess, because so sports physicals are not a K through 12 thing. By law, sports physicals are 7 through 12. And so I'm just interested. You're leaning into the sports physical is where we're going to get the identifier for. But if it's by law that we only do sports physicals for grades 7 through 12, and you don't do a card for third graders. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever had a third grader in a sport. And so I'm just trying to ask if the physical form, the sports physicals, are what we're utilizing for competitive sports, because that's what your testifiers are saying. That's what all the stories were saying. It's not about peewee basketball. It's about competitive sports and losing their opportunity, if I heard right. How are we going to do that in an elementary level? Because right now there's no data protections. There's nothing there in line. There's not an AD at an elementary level. So I'm wondering, your bill is talking about an elementary level, and I'm just wondering how in the parameter of that working, if the sports physicals don't go down to kindergarten, how would K through 6 go through the process?
Chair Scott.
Madam Chair, thank you. As I laid out, if it's not a co-ed team, going in, and everybody knows it's going to be boys and girls on the same team. If there was a question as to the sex of a child that wanted to play on an all-girls team, then the coach or the athletic association would have to come to some agreement and have a policy on that, which I'm sure they already have. We don't have to lay out every minuscule little detail in process. The stuff that I laid out, the high school league, that's not in law anywhere that I know of. It's not in statute. So we don't have to lay out every single little detail. But I think if there's a question, and then that's where they're going to have to prove that that child is a male or female.
Representative Keeler, follow up.
So we talk a lot about data, and I actually ask you a lot of questions about protecting data. You just mentioned that in the AD world, with a sports physical, again, grade 7 through 12, there are parameters that information is protected. Tell me what actual data parameters we would have around that, or are we just saying that anybody in a crowd who's attending a third grade basketball game could look at a kid? Because we know this happened in Nebraska with an 8-year-old who got pushed to the side in the soccer tournament because they looked too manly or too male. And it was a girl, born a girl, not an issue. And so I'm just trying to figure out how this would work in an elementary school. Like, I'm a mom of a kid who's playing soccer, and so I'm trying to understand, if we don't have the physical, and you're saying that we just have somebody in the crowd that can say, oh, I'm questioning that kid, and then we have to go through this process, how is that data going to be protected then if there's not an already
physical structure? Oh, thanks. But you could hear me, right? I'd be like,
I heard
okay.
You.
Is that?
Madam Chair, thank you, and Representative Keeler. Again, I think we're getting into details that aren't, first of all, there may not be any data. I mean, at some point, a coach is probably going to have to take somebody's word for it. But I don't know if my legal person here has an answer for that. But I don't want to make this harder than it is and more complex than it is, because I think that there are processes in place right now for when that happens. You know, I don't know if any of you have had kids on traveling squads for athletics or whatever, and a lot of times it's younger kids. And there may be people challenging a kid's age, challenging a kid's gender and sex. So there's a process in place for it now. I'm sure I don't have anybody here from an athletic association to answer that question, but I'm sure that it happens now.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. That creates a lot of anxiety and worry that we just don't know how elementary data, or if we're asking somebody to prove what gender they are, that where would that data be stored? How would that data be used? So I do think we need to look at that. If it is really about competitive sports, I think that lives a little bit more in the secondary education around where the sports physicals come in. I just want to put that on record that I just don't think that we're protecting the littles data the best. But so kind of what from you're saying then is that people could just look at an individual, and from, like, I heard people say, like, our eyes will tell us who the girls and the boys are. Like, I just want to make sure that then that's what we're utilizing. We're just utilizing a visual moment for somebody in a crowd to determine that that could be a different gender.
I think if you look at the Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Keeler, if you look at the entirety of Chapter 121A, you will see what the heart of that chapter is. This is in keeping with that chapter. The chapter is about giving opportunities to female athletes because they've been denied in the past because of their sex. Sex is not defined in current statute. We're defining what a female is here. The rest of the statute stays in place as is. And in case you were wondering, there is rulemaking that goes into all this. So I think we're getting a field on a rabbit trail here that isn't really pertinent. I don't know what they're doing with the data now. I don't know. But they've got to have some way of keeping a kid's data is their name, their address, their phone number, their email address. What are these athletic associations doing now with that data? Under this 121A, I can guarantee you that there's a policy around it. Again, it may not be written in the statute, but as you know, there's rulemaking that goes along with statute.
Representative Keeler.
Thanks, Chair. Representative Scott, I find it interesting that you would not have dug into data around a bill that's your bill, because you dig into data a lot about the bills that are our bills.
No data, Madam Chair. There's no data provision. There's no Chapter 13 citation in the bill. So there was no data to dig into.
Rep. Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. I think if we're going to start diving into gender at birth about kids, that would, in my mind, lean into data. But I'll move on to some of the other questions I have. So when we're identifying what a female is, in the new language you used, which I do appreciate that we're not examining genitalia of kids anymore in the first portion of this bill, but I just want to clarify that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and I just want it to be on record that it feels like part of this language is saying that a female is only a female who at some point produces, transport, or utilize eggs for fertilization. What we know is 11% of the population who are born as women are born infertile, which if we do the math, 11% of the population in Minnesota is like 300,000 people that we have in Minnesota that wouldn't be eligible for girls' sports because of how we're identifying what a woman is. I just think that that's really... I think it could lead into some question. But back to, like, we're just going to look at somebody and point them out is what this always comes down to, is just looking at a kid and deciding that we need to question who they are and where they are and how they're showing up. We know that this happens with age a lot. We know that, like, and it's used as a tool in competitive sports. I don't know if any of you have been in competitive sports, but what happens is you're in a championship game or something's going on, and I'm like, Representative Lawrence looks older than he is in this structure. Sorry. And then all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, please.
And then all of a sudden, your age is in question, right? And that's probably not everybody else's. Some kids are taller than other kids. Some kids are just bigger than other kids, right? And so we do that by visibly looking at somebody. What I'm worried about is the bullying impact that this will have. We talk about protecting girls' sports. And I am an athlete through and through. I played sports all throughout high school and in college. So I'm with you on that. What I'm nervous about is every single individual who testified today that was an athlete had some sort of element. And I just want to go through, and I want to do this as just a real-time example of somebody from a crowd could just look at somebody in front of them and identify and question if they're actually the gender that they say they are. We had testifiers today that had larger Adam's apples than others. We had some that had hair on the top of their lips, some that showed up that had broader shoulders. One even mentioned that there was a friend they had that was 6'3". That's rather tall for a girl. We have people that showed up to testify that had different jaw structures. So you're saying that we could challenge, just anybody here could challenge any one of those girls at any point in time and say, you're lying about your gender. And then we're just supposed to trust who then to determine if that was real or not. Because this opens it up for, this is more harmful for sports in the long run, because what will happen is you guys have a great basketball team, but you guys have really tall girls, taller than average girls. So now your opposing team, anybody from their team can come and say, you three are all taller than average. You must have been born a boy. You're inappropriate. You're not showing up in the right gender. So walk me through how a situation like that happening, because the stories that we saw coming from like Utah, and I don't know, did you look at that story after that was shared earlier, that it was that a school board member just randomly picked a kid out of the crowd because they were a different size, and they're in a lawsuit now because of that. And I don't want that to happen here. We have a growing amount of young girls that are actually going into sports. We know that it's suicide prevention. We know all of these things. So walk me through how in that scenario and in that way, like that wouldn't happen here in Minnesota if this were ever to become law. Because I am sure all of the moms and everybody who came and talked about loving their kids and having, you know, daughters in the future don't want the general society to be looking at their kids on a court or a field and say, you kind of look like you could maybe have been a boy. Like, that just leads it up for that. That's a lot of discrimination that could happen. That's a lot of bullying that can happen to any of our kids. And that's what I'm really worried about is the integrity of all of us and bullying that can happen in our sports arena. So walk me through how you're sure that would not happen in the state of Minnesota in our sports arena.
Chair Scott, would you like Dr. Simons to comment on the definition question first?
Madam Chair, yeah, I would like to have the physician answer that question first, and then I'll go to the rest of the question.
Okay. Dr. Madam Simons. Chair.
So you brought up the question about infertility, and you suggested that would not make that person female. So the same argument would apply if a person was born without an arm or leg. They are still a human. So sex is defined by our reproductive strategy. So female sex has the reproductive strategy for eggs. Male sex has a reproductive strategy for sperm. And so what I talked about earlier, there are certain disorders of sexual differentiation where that body plan doesn't go according. There's a disorder. In the same way as a person is born without a limb or something like that, you would not say they're not human.
Thank you. And Chair Scott, did you want to answer the other?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're getting caught on these rabbit trails, because what we're offering here is definitions and just reiterating what's already in statute. So if there are processes now for what you laid out, for challenging a kid's age, for challenging a kid's gender, there are processes laid out. I can guarantee you there are processes within the Minnesota State High School League. There are processes within athletic associations that our kids are in now. None of that's going to change. This bill is about preserving what's in Chapter 121A, It's about preserving girls' sports for females. The only reason, again, that we add a definition of female here is because it's been in question for the last few years. So, like, okay, we'll define what a female is, even though throughout this statute, it talks about the sex that has been denied opportunities in the past. 7 times it mentions that, and that's females. So I think you're getting off on a rabbit trail that has nothing to do with the bill. But I will have Ms. Carlson, she might have some input on this.
Sure, Ms. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, a few things. I was just thinking, you said quite a bit there. I mean, first of all, I just go back to the fact that what many testifiers have already reiterated is that there are physical exams present now in sports. The law is not very clear about exactly that process, but there is a process. So I just say there are already physical exams. That's what I heard Dr. Simon said. That's what I heard Dr. Odom say. And that's what I heard another doctor who testified to. And I'm thinking, you know, any doctor would say that before you play sports, you have to check out to make sure that you're healthy. But members, what we do know is that 70% of the population believes that males do not belong in female sports. And I'm glad that you brought up bullying, because there is a concern. No student should ever be bullied. But the issue here is that girls who are forced to play with males and lied to and not told that they're actually competing against somebody who has a physical advantage over them, who harms their safety. We've heard of, you were talking about articles, we've heard of Peyton McNabb, who got a concussion. She was concussed because a male was playing on a female volleyball team. This is a lie to women, and arguably that is that should be part a concern within the provisions of 121A and the anti-bullying statute.
Representative Keeler, follow-up.
Well, now I'm kind of confused, because earlier you said 80%, and now you just said 70%. So, like, I mean, we're just trying to figure out where your numbers are and what's relevant or not. But I won't ask any more questions, and I am going down a rabbit trail on the bill, because I do think it's really harmful, and I think that the actual impact that this would have is actually more detrimental to just girls who want to play sports, because people will be looking at them and trying to identify them for them. And it doesn't seem like there's real parameters to protect elementary kids, which, as a mom of an elementary kid, that makes me really, really concerned. I just think this bill isn't ready, and it's not going to become law. We're just wasting time really talking about a hateful topic. So thank you.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. This little, the bill has a lot of issues, a lot of challenges ahead of it. Minnesota Human Rights Act, constitutional issues. But what we just heard with Representative Keeler's questions were some of the things that in this little interim break where I had time to walk around and reflect on my experience as well in coaching kids from fifth grade to eighth grade. And I was thinking most specifically about the fifth graders that I met and coached, since they don't get that same physical exam thing going on. There's a lot of questions when you have an array of kids who are at very different levels of development. And I remember kids who were very tall compared to other ones, and then there were kids who played basketball obviously a lot and were quite adept and were very skilled, versus other kids who, you know, you had to teach them starting with a layup. So you have all these kids, a very different level of players. You have players who can take a rebound in fifth grade and dribble the length and put it in the basket. And then you'll get parents. You know, when you think about elementary, the competitiveness isn't from the kids, it's from the parents. And they're into the game, and they want to win, and they don't want to listen to playing all kids equally just to give them some experience and time sometimes. They want to win, and they would come down to the bench, and they would add their 2 cents, and they would ask me if that kid on the other team is older, and why is she on the team? And so I remembered these things as I was walking around here today. So I think the discussion is truly, with this bill, it should be spelled out in the bill, a bill like this. I know you like to refer to it as a rabbit hole. It is. There's details here. And a bill like this needs more details. It's a one-page bill. We could, you know, add a page and flush this out a little bit more. It would be, I think, helpful to everybody. The questions I had were numbers again. This is one of the first questions I had when I thought about this bill was, in Minnesota, how many student-athletes are we talking about? Do you, Representative Scott, do you have any question or any knowledge of the actual numbers of student-athletes that this would affect?
Chair Scott.
Chair Bennett, thank you for the question. No, I don't have any of those numbers. No. I don't think that that data is kept anywhere.
So no data?
Representative
no.
Bierman.
No data.
No data. Or even, I mean...
Representative Bierman.
Chair Bennett, thank you. No even numbers that people are, where people are contesting it or, you know, in sports here in Minnesota? Nothing? Nothing at all?
Chair Scott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know where any of that data would be kept in one place. If you can point me to that area, I would get that number for you. But to my knowledge, it does not exist.
Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, but you did check, like, with high schools or high school league or somebody?
Chair Scott.
No, I did not, because I don't think I.
Okay, I'll move on. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'll just put out there that I was watching a hearing, a federal hearing, and they talked about this issue, and they said there were 510,000 college athletes, and they asked them how many of them are trans. And they said less than 10. So I'm just curious. These numbers might make a difference, something to consider anyway. At least to know the scope of the problem. You know, we talked here earlier, a testifier said, you're the health committee, you should be working on, or you're the education policy committee, you should be working on education issues. And it seems like we're off the track with this bill. The only other thing, the concern I have, Madam Chair, is just the potential expense of the testing if we just move this bill along and, you know, who's going to make up these rules and how is that going to come out? I think there's going to be a lot of issues and, you know, attorneys involved here as far as trying to determine this. So the bill is not ready. The bill should not be moving forward. And just, I'll be a no vote. Thanks.
Lee Jordan, would you like to wrap this up before the author closes?
Yeah, Madam Chair. Thank you. I have a few questions. And one of them is related to the Minnesota Human Rights Act. We heard testimony from the Department of Education that this is in conflict with that act. I am familiar with that act and that it exists. I know you are the chair of the Judiciary Committee, which... to Chair Scott, does the Judiciary Committee have purview over the Minnesota Human Rights Act and the Human Rights Department?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jordan, it does.
Lee Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So why is this bill not going to the Judiciary Committee then if there are significant questions about not only the Human Rights Act but also some of these data questions?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jordan, if you can show me on the bill draft the section that is either Chapter 13 or Chapter 363A, which is the Human Rights Act, that would require this to come to my committee, please point that out.
Lee Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We heard that this conflicts with that act, and we're not the experts on that. I think your committee needs to be looking at this and asking those questions. And I did speak to DFL lead Liebling, who is the DFL lead on the Judiciary Committee, and she agrees that this bill absolutely, because of the interactions with the Human Rights Act, needs to come to the Judiciary Committee. So is there a reason why? Just because it's not necessarily referenced or it interacts with that act, and that's the act that's under your committee's purview. So why not take it to your committee and use it? That's why we're asking. I mean, I think that's why people are asking these data questions, is because this bill's headed to the floor. I mean, what's the rush? Why can't it be examined by the experts in both data and human rights?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, there's no Chapter 10 reference in, or Chapter 13 reference in the bill. There's nothing in this or the underlying statute 121A that has anything to do with with data. And neither does it have Chapter 363A, human rights. This is a bill specifically that addresses 121A, which is Minnesota's kind of like their Title IX, right? And it is directed not at employment and equal opportunity. It's addressed in education statutes. That's why I'm setting this committee. This is all education statute. The only other reference in the bill is to 128C, which is also, that's the Minnesota State High School League chapter. That's all this bill does. Hey, Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when we say that it's notwithstanding any law to the contrary, would that be... We will go over going through the chair. We're all new here.
I can't remember.
Okay, great. Thank you. Apologies. It says notwithstanding any law. I think that is a reference to the Minnesota Human Rights Act. And I think with that, I would make a motion to refer this to the Judiciary Committee, and I would ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
One second. Sorry, I've been going up and down so much I don't even know where I'm at. Try that again. Representative Jordan moves to amend the motion to re-refer House File 12 as amended to the Committee on Judiciary Finance and Civil Law. All those in favor say, I'm sorry. Oh, and we will have a roll call, Representative Jordan. I'm sorry. So here we go.
Chair Bennett.
No.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Lee Jordan.
Aye.
Bierman.
Aye.
DePell.
No.
Falconer.
Aye.
Ogleman.
No.
Gordon.
No.
Green.
Aye. Aye.
Hill.
Hill votes aye.
Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Lawrence.
Lawrence votes no.
Roach.
Roach votes no.
Okay, there being seven ayes in favor. A six.
Wait, hang on.
Six ayes.
Okay. Being six ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail, and the current motion remains to place House File 12 as amended on the general register. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then another question I have, Chair Scott, is you mentioned that there's rulemaking associated with this bill. I'm not seeing a fiscal note, and we're not a fiscal committee, so is this bill going to be going to Education Finance to examine any rulemaking money that's going to go to the Minnesota High School League or MDE or any other entity that will be engaging in that rulemaking that you referenced?
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The plan is not to send it to Education Finance. If there's any rulemaking that outside of, I can't imagine really honestly what rulemaking they're going to have to do. Everything's already in here. All they're going to have to do is figure out this definition. That's the only substantial change. So I don't think that the rulemaking would probably amount to much, if anything. It's probably something that normally the Department of Education or the High School League could absorb.
Thank you. And also, Representative Jordan, we just discussed this with Chair Krishan. He said he does not need to see this bill. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if there is costs associated with this bill, we're just not going to address that? How are we going to account for any costs that are associated with this bill if we don't know what the costs are? We're just going to ask the High School League and the department to absorb those costs?
Chair Scott.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. According to the Chair Bennett, Representative Krisha has already been asked if he needs to see this bill, and he said no. He knows more about education finance than I do, so I'm guessing he would know whether that bill needs to come to his committee or not for a few lines of rulemaking, potentially.
Lee Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe we're, you know, the hour is late. I'm not trying to draw this out. But so I'm hoping you can, in your final comments, can address whether or not you did request a fiscal note. I know that's something that's very important to all of us, is understanding the costs of bills. And so I'm hoping that one has been requested and one will be forthcoming, and perhaps that'll be something that we can work on re-referring if there is a fiscal cost associated with it. But, you know, as other people have said, there are real problems. And there are real problems in girls' sports. You know, I'm a fan of women's soccer, not playing it myself, but I like to watch it. And the U.S. women's national team has won World Cups more than any other team. But they didn't achieve pay parity with men who, to my knowledge, have not really won ever in soccer. They didn't achieve that pay parity with those losers until about 2 years ago, despite being world champions. There is real issues with assault that girls and women face. And the other thing, too, is that there are real problems that our transgender Minnesotans face and Americans face. 80% of trans people have faced discrimination. 57% of people agree that transgender people face more discrimination than other people. And that's what this bill is. This is a bill about real discrimination against the trans community in Minnesota, and specifically girls. We said that another quote you said is that you don't want to make this more complicated than it is. Well, you did that by introducing a bill that is requiring all these rabbit holes. The Minnesota High School League has had a policy in place for the past 10 years that says, let kids just play sports. Girls get to play sports. Girls get to play sports on girls' sports teams. That's the current policy, and it's not that complicated. And it's being managed just fine. You know, it's really, this is what your bill is what is creating this uncertainty and this division. This has been the law for 10 years. This has been what the Minnesota High School League has had. And it's fine. It's working because girls are playing sports. And that's what's important. That's why we had to pass a law that has taken 50 years to produce athletes like Simone Biles, like Caitlin Clark, that we're all so proud of. And this bill is not going to help girls in sports. It's just going to prevent a few kids from playing sports on the team that matters to them. And so I also just want to let everyone know that this bill will not become law in Minnesota. We will all be voting against it, and I want people to know how I voted today, and I want people to remember it forever. So I will be asking for a roll call to put this on the general register, because I want that in the history books, how I voted. I also want people to know that trans people exist. They have always existed, and that's really beautiful, I think. And I'm sorry that we spent time on this bill, because this bill will not become law because there is not support for it in the Minnesota House. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And Representative Jordan has requested a roll call, and we will do that when the time comes. Before we go to Chair Scott for her closing, I just want to thank members on both sides of the aisle and those who are left here watching. Thank you for being respectful. This is a very passionate subject on all sides, and I think you all handled it really well, and I thank you for that. And everybody's comments have been duly noted, and I know we're mostly silent on this side, but I just kind of wanted to give you the opportunity to flesh this out the way you wanted it. We appreciate how it was all handled. And before we close, I wanted to just share a quick personal story, because this is personal for me, and this is going to date me now, but when I was in ninth grade, that's when Title IX passed. That was quite a few years ago. And it's my generation and those generations before that fought hard to have girls' and women's only sports. And for a very good reason. And when I was in 12th grade, because it took a while for, once it was signed, there was various things that happened for it to be really come into action. As a 12th grader, as a senior in high school, I participated on our high school's very first girls' basketball team. We had our own sport. And I was, believe it or not, very shy and withdrawn at that age. And I joined that team along with other girls. And it was one of the best things for me. And, I went on to play in college, which is why I have a wrecked knee right now. But that's another matter. It meant a lot to me. And had boys been able to play on my team when I was a 12th grader, I know I wouldn't have done it. And you can imagine how really unskilled we girls were, who had never grown up playing basketball, really, except maybe with our brothers a little bit. We didn't play well, but we loved it. And it's just important to have fairness and safety in this situation. We fought hard to have girls' sports, and if we don't define this now, girls' sports will turn into nothing. It will not be girls' or women's sports anymore. And that's why I'm pretty passionate about this myself, because it was a big deal to have our first girls' basketball team. So, Chair Scott, thanks for letting me say that, and I'm going to have you close us out here, and then we will have a roll call vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the record, Representative Jordan, Ms. Carlson be more than happy to answer some of your questions about the notwithstanding language before we get going on the closing. But thank you for the discussion today. And this bill is really not all that complicated. It's reiterating what current law is in Chapter 121A. It's saying that only girls, only female students can play on female teams. And then we go on to define what a female is. It doesn't change anything about the data. It doesn't change anything about the Human Rights Act. But when Title IX and associated state laws were passed, they were passed to address a real problem. Past inequities, or lack of equal opportunity for girls in extracurricular and competitive athletic programs. The question was very straightforward. Should girls enjoy the same opportunities as boys in athletics? And Title IX's answer to that question was a resounding yes. However, when Title IX was passed, no one would have imagined biological males forfeiting their well-established privileges in athletic accommodations to then don the cloak of a female and use the rights established for women to muscle women on the podium and deny women their right to fair play. I ask for your support. We need to protect our girls. We need to protect girls and girls' sports. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Scott. And the Chair renews her motion that House File 12, as amended, be placed on the General Register. A roll call vote has been requested. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Bennett.
Aye.
Chair Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Lee Jordan.
No.
Bierman.
Bierman, no.
DePell.
DePell votes yes.
Falconer.
No.
Fogelman.
Yes.
Gordon.
Aye.
Green.
Votes no.
Hill.
Hill votes no.
Keeler.
Keeler, no.
Lawrence.
Lawrence votes yes.
Roach.
Roach votes yes.
There being 7 in favor and 6 against, the motion prevails, and House File 12, as amended, is placed on the General Register. Members, that concludes today's agenda. Thank you all very much, and our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 25th. With that, the committee stands adjourned.